The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, I was just watching Reeling in the Years last night, the excitement of it all. For about the 150th time it was on last night, but it's always worth watching. There's a new one coming out, of course. We can't wait for the, is it the 2010 to 2019? So that's airing tomorrow week. But anyway, the reason I say that is because last night was 1980 and it opened with that infamous Charlie Haughey Tighten Your Belts State of the Nation address. It never gets old, and it's rehashed every so often when we're going through tough times. I remember watching it back in 2008, 2009, and even now again, we remember last year, I think apart from the toy show, Leo Varadkar's St. Patrick's Day State of the Nation was probably up there as one of the most watched. We all sat around and waited to hear what he had to say, and there was all sorts of reaction to it afterwards, good and bad. But we did take notice of it. This was a pivotal time, and we've had many of them since, and we've had quotes from poets and movies and all of that sort of stuff. But then the latest was last week or earlier this week, the State of the COVID Nation address from Taoiseach Micheál Martin. But I'm just wondering, do these kind of State of the Nation address telling us we're nearly there and to stick with it, do they actually work, or do people get a little bit tired of them? Well, I'm joined now this morning by the UL, from the UL School of Psychology. I'm joined by Orla Muldoon. Orla, good morning to you. Hello, Orla. Okay. Do you know what, Orla? While we're sorting that out, I just let's play a clip from Mike Ryan of the World Health Organization from earlier this week.
Everything about this pandemic is about trust. If you tell me something, I have got to trust that you're giving me the best information and that you have my best interest at heart. Now, how many people in this response have complained that they don't trust the government, or they don't trust the scientists, or they don't trust each other? So sometimes we tend to revert to technological solutions for what are essentially behavioural challenges for us all. That's where I think the most innovation is needed right now, is in behavioural sciences and in gaining new knowledge about we, how I react and understand epidemics and how we behave during them and how we process information and advice and how do we build trust. And I think that's just as scientific as building new vaccines.
So that's Mike Ryan there talking about the importance of us having trust in our politicians, in pharma, in science and all of that. Orla, are you there now?
I am here.
I have full trust in the phone lines. Actually, I don't sometimes hear. But anyway, good to talk to you. You're a professor, as I said, in UL School of Psychology there. So talk to me a little bit, you know, how important is it that the government of the day has the trust and the support of the people, particularly when Micheál Martin is making that State of the Nation address? Is its decision-making distorted if, you know, people don't have trust?
Yeah, well, trust is crucial to the whole business of adherence to these public health measures. There isn't a solution where, you know, the army can come out and make us all do what it is required. That, it just can't happen. You know, no country has that kind of resource. We have to find a way in which people listen and feel like it is in their own interests and in their family's interests and in their community's interests to do the kinds of things that we need to do to keep ourselves safe from COVID. And that is entirely about trust. So it is about us all feeling that we should do it together.
But how difficult is that during this pandemic? Like, is the problem that we have a government trying to spin too many plates at once and they're all wobbling and falling rather than, let's say, going for zero COVID option instead of this level 5 slimline tonic type approach, which has left us neither here nor there? So in other words, how can you get everybody's trust when there's such divisive opinion in this country? Some people say we need to go for a harder lockdown, other people say open up. So how, the government are in a no-win situation in winning trust in that situation, are they?
I think one of the issues for government is that naturally they play to their own constituencies. You know, particular demographics play for, you know, vote for particular parties. So sometimes the government are different parties within the coalition are playing to particular audiences.
But no, Orla, don't governments have the tough situation there where they can't be popular and can't play to the gallery in the way that opposition parties can? They can take a straw in the wind and go with it, whereas the government parties have to make the hard decisions.
They do have to make the hard decisions, without question, because the whole point of what Mike Ryan was saying there is that you need actually to be as fair as you can, and you need to strive for consistency and equity of treatment of everybody. But the reality is that some politicians know that their base is in a rural area or that their base is in an urban area. So they will be playing more to what they see as their key demographic. And we know that COVID isn't this isn't an equal disease. It's not hitting same communities in the same way or particular parts of our nation in the same way. So because it's a kind of there's an inequality in how people experience it, actually that then impacts the trust. So like we are seeing that quite a lot. So the divisions that existed in Irish society before the pandemic have now begun to play out in whether it's vaccine rollout or whether it's who has a garden or whether or not you can get access to your sport or the exercise of interest. So all of those things are linked to who the decision makers are. And our decision makers are a particular age, education, and often gender profile. And so there's kind of this almost implicit bias in the decision making that
What do you mean by that in the current situation?
Well, this morning I was looking at the number of people who had been issued fines. And more than half of the people who have been issued fines for breaking COVID restrictions, it says in today's paper, are between the ages of 18 and 25. And we really need the 18 to 25-year-olds on board. Because the 18 to 25-year-olds, as well as being out and about, they don't necessarily have gardens, but there are a lot of the workers that do the retail work,
But when you were between 18 and 25, were you paying heed to what the government was saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So we need to find a way of communicating with that group. But I'm not sure that issuing fines is the way to win hearts and minds. Mm. It also said in the same newspaper article that many of this group haven't paid the fines. So I do wonder if, you know, certainly 18 to 25-year-olds may not be listening to the government, but they do have a vote. Mm. So we do need to find a way of communicating with that group. But one of the key things I would say is that really the public health emergency team is populated by people. I'm pretty sure there's no 18 to 25-year-old in there.
I know that,
about people without having them at the decision-making table. And that isn't a good idea.
But you see, Orla, here I go back again, that no matter what the government do, they're doing it wrong. If fines weren't being issued, we would be complaining that the government have got it all wrong, that people are going outside their 5K and that there should be fines in place. So that's an example of them being in a no-win situation.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think one of the things that we need to think about is coming up with the kinds of restrictions or guidelines. Maybe if we even could start calling them guidelines rather than restrictions. So because we're in this for a long haul, we're a couple of years away from being through this and out the other side. COVID is going to be with us for a while. So how is it that we allow people to live their lives and manage risk? And that includes 18 to 25-year-olds as much as, you know, middle-aged people and older people. And I don't think the solution is going to be fines. I think the solution has to be about being outdoors, reconsidering how we use outside space. I think that it's time, really, in part because people appear to be very frustrated with this long lockdown. It's time to start thinking creatively about the way that we live the way that we live with COVID. Well, and it's time to start trusting people. I have a lot of contact with 18 to 25-year-olds by virtue of working in a university. And I meet really responsible, trustworthy young people every day.
Well, listening to you saying that, and then, you know, I read your tweets during the week. You had a right cut of the government for allowing GAA inter-county training to resume at the end of April. And a lot of those people that play inter-county are between the ages of 18 and 25. Like, do you not see the striking the balance there in terms of how, for the rest of us that follow sport, it's a great outlet to have in these tough times? And it carried us across the winter, being able to watch our favourite rugby team, our favourite Premier League team, and even follow the Championship last year. You know, it was a wonderful distraction for so many people who are suffering with mental health. But
I say to you, Damien, there, who did you mean when you said we? It was a great, you know, it tied it a lot of us. You know, it brought us over. We were distracted. Who do you mean by that?
Well,
because crucial to solving this problem is making sure that we allow everybody, that we're, you know, we're consistent, that there's solidarity, that everybody gets a fair.
But not everybody is into everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can't.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said, you tweeted, this would be a major error. Pander to men and men's interests and leave women holding the babies again. But inter-county training includes camogie players, ladies football players as well, inter-county. And, you know, it's probably a little bit of a sop at the hundreds of thousands of women that love sport and love the GAA as well. At a time where we're trying to promote women in sport, you tweet that because inter-county training is allowed to begin again, that it's pandering to men and leaving women holding the babies. Is that not a little bit sexist?
Well, I would say that one of the things that's very clear is that this whole pandemic, again, going back to the issue of equality, has been much harder on women. And when we look at sport in particular, and it's something that I am very interested in, what we find is that the benefits of sport and the benefits of participation in sport is to do with participating, not watching. There's very little evidence that watching sport is good for you. So some of the things that we're saying are good for people in terms of mental health, that's rhetoric. We need to be very sure that if we're allowing inter-county back, that somehow, that because we're allowing and pandering to something on one side, that we're not really leaving other people behind. So one of the things
Are you conflating two issues here? That just because you're allowing something for the benefit of an awful lot of people and trying step by step to open up the country, that and somehow it's a sop against somebody else?
But the reality is that there are things that if we allow some things open, I would question, why would we allow something that is an amateur sport open, that is disproportionately a sport that interests men, and it isn't participation that's been opened up? Why aren't we allowing the opening up of children's sport? So I would question why that isn't happening.
Okay.
I would question why it is that we're not opening up. I did question very much why we weren't opening what I would see as essential services like the fitting of children's shoes, as against, for instance, horse racing.
Okay.
So there is reasonable questions that need to be asked about the way in which.
I think you're right, Orla, and you talk about participation in sports, and I know you're a very keen runner, and that's been a great participant for a participation sport, if you want to call it that, or exercise for so many people to deal with mental health issues as well. And it's great to see so many people out running and walking as well, all within reason. And look, when you run the angles and all of these things, you open one thing, you create a problem for another. But look, we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks so much. It's an interesting discussion, and you do refer to, as I said, that Maynooth University study as well, in relation to, you're talking about women there and how it has disproportionately affected them, those statistics which we referred to earlier, 1 in 10 women having to give up work, an example of what you're talking about there. So listen, Orla, thank you very much indeed. That's Orla Muldoon there of UL.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.